And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, we're going to have a lot of fun today because we're going to be looking at something very important. And I hope that I can provide you with some assistance, with some help. And I believe that you and I are friends, companions, co-workers, and co-warriors in a great cause. We are fighters for truth, for truth. You know, a lot of people ask me, Tex, are you one of those conspiracy theorists? And I always, you know, always have fun with that. Conspiracy theorist. I went to Wikipedia recently. Somebody told me that my biography there, they have a little biographical article or something about Tex Mars on Wikipedia, which is like an encyclopedia online. And so they said, Tex, you should see what they say about you. A lot of the things are not true. So I, you know, went to Wikipedia and read what they said was my biography. Well, of course, it was, you know, a sort of a mixture of truth and fiction. And I had to smile a lot about that. They said I was an Austin, Texas preacher who was into conspiracy theory. You know, when they're trying to criticize you or cast scorn or ridicule on you, they call you preacher. And, of course, if you're one of the politically correct ministers that agree with you, like Jesse Jackson, you're not a preacher, you're a reverend. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, or pastor. But if they want to put you down, you're just a preacher. And that sort of brings an image in people's mind, you know, of some redneck from down south, supposedly, that tobacco, you know, that he chews, you know, coming out of the sides of his mouth. But I found most interesting the fact that they claimed in Wikipedia that I was a conspiracy theorist. Now, I've written over 40 books for some of the world's top publishers, and I've been exposing conspiracies now for well over a quarter of a century. But evidently, I'm just a theorist. And you, dear friends, you listen to this program, probably you've got the same situation. They love to try to put you down by calling you a conspiracy theorist. Now, I want to propose to you, as I did in the introduction to my newest book, Conspiracy World, that you and I are not interested at all in theories. Oh, I mean, it may be fun to sit around and have a cup of coffee or drink a Coke or lemonade and talk about theories, ideas, speculation. It's always a lot of fun, no doubt about it. But folks, this is serious business. We're talking about the lives of millions, billions of people. And when I write books, when I produce documentary videos on the subject of murder, mayhem, bloodshed, economic chaos and collapse, Big Brother, the Orwellian state, dictatorships, concentration camps. This is not theory. This is not speculation. I'm not interested, nor are you, I'm sure of it, in guesswork. Now, I find it always interesting that, you know, I have a college degree in political science. Yeah, that's what the transcript says. I graduated summa cum laude with a degree in political science. But there really wasn't much science to it. Wasn't very scientific. And, you know, the political science department at the university I went to was situated or located along with, you know, other disciplines like, you know, sociology and history and all kinds of things, in what was called the social science division. But I never could find much that was scientific about those social sciences, sociology and psychology. Most of it was just pure guesswork, nonsense, speculation, and gobbledygook. And I don't mind telling the professors that to their face. And sometimes I did, in a friendly way, over coffee or lunch. And they would laugh and usually would admit it. You know, the ones that didn't take themselves too serious. Let me tell you something, friends. I taught military science. I taught Air Force science at the University of Texas in Austin, one of the world's most prestigious universities. But I have gained more knowledge. I have acquired more scientific facts in the 25 years since I founded Power of Prophecy Ministries than I ever did teaching for three universities or spending 20 years and retiring as an officer in the U.S. Air Force. There is a science of conspiracies. And really, science just involves finding out the facts, a systematic body of knowledge or facts. People who research and delve into conspiracies and take it seriously quickly realize that they are conspiracy scientists. And if they haven't reached the level of scientists, they are, as a minimum, conspiracy researchers. But of course, the world is frightened to death that you will find out the facts. You will document these conspiracies, and it will make you angry, and you might just overthrow the powers that be in the establishment because you're going to say, I'm not going to take this anymore. They're frightened of you, dear friends. They don't dare to recognize you as a conspiracy researcher, a conspiracy scientist, because it means you know things that the masses don't know. The mass of people are simply, may I try to be kind, but I am talking to people, you who are conspiracy researchers, conspiracy scientists, but the masses in the world, 99.9% of the people that you meet on the street every day and in your offices and in your church pews are ignoramuses. They are ignorant. And many of them are willingly ignorant. They want us to be ignorant. They're frightened to death of finding out too much. Some years ago, there was a movie. I think it was a Hitchcock movie. I'm not sure. Entitled The Man Who Knew Too Much. I've mentioned on this radio program before that my sister, Joyce, worked as the assistant, sort of like an executive secretary to the head of the mental science, mental retardation, mental health department for a county here in Texas, quite a large county, Jefferson County, down Beaumont, Port Arthur, that area. He was a psychiatrist, had a PhD in psychiatry. And I'd just written a book, I believe it was Circle of Intrigue, about the hidden circle of the inner circle of the global Illuminati conspiracy. And you know what? She had never talked to this psychiatrist, her boss, about the kind of books that I did or whatever as an author. But she asked me to send her an extra book because she wanted to give it to him as a gift. So she walked into his office. He was sitting there at the desk, and she came in and she says, Mr. So-and-so, or Dr. So-and-so, I want to give you a gift of my brother's newest book. He's a best-selling author, and I thought you might like to have this. And you know, the psychiatrist probably was the kind of guy that would say, oh, I don't believe in conspiracies. Oh, I don't believe 9/11 was an inside job. Oh, that's so stupid. Oh, I don't believe the Federal Reserve is really owned by private banks. Why? Oh, no, that can't be. I believe everything Obama tells me. I believe everything Washington, D.C. says to me. I suspect he was that kind of a guy. But it's so interesting that she caught him off guard and she gave him this book. and he was looking at the cover, and he saw the title and the subtitle, and not even knowing what was inside the book, she said his face turned white, turned ashen, and he looked up at her and he says, "Now, this book is not going to get me killed, is it? If I take this book home and put it in my library, I mean, I don't have to expect a police SWAT team or something to come in because I own this book." It frightened him. It scared him. Just the idea of owning this book. Here's a guy that didn't believe in Big Brother government, no doubt. You have freedoms. You have liberties in America. You have the Bill of Rights. They can't just barge in your house with a SWAT team. But you know, evidently he was frightened of such things happening. She hadn't even mentioned it. You're just a book. Seeing the title, maybe he had heard of me before. I don't know. It scared him. If this was a free country, why would this doctor of psychiatry be so frightened to even take the book home with him or keep it there in the office? Now, I don't know what happened to the book. Probably when my sister left, he probably, you know, dropped by one of those big white elephant trash cans and threw it in and said, "Man, oh, so glad to get rid of that. Man, my heart's just beating. Man, let me look all around, see if anybody's following me." I've seen a lot of people like that. I remember going to dinner with somebody and they asked me what I did for a living. Wanda and I had just met them. And I told them a little bit about our ministry and work. And I mean, the wife of the man, she literally put her hands on her ears and she said, "Oh my goodness, I don't want to hear that. Please don't tell me anything about that." You know, in other words, she was saying, "I may know too much." And then she said to me, "Aren't you scared knowing all those things?" She said, "I know what you're saying is true, but my goodness, that's scary. I don't want to think that our government's into all those things." You see, it violated her comfort zone. Her little fuzzy-wuzzy world that she had created, this imaginary world that didn't really exist. Now, we became very good friends with that couple, and later on, she wanted my books. She asked for my books, and she actually believes all these things now. She said, "Well, I really did then. I'd heard about them, and I knew it was true, but it just frightened me so much to even think about it." And she said, "I'm still afraid, because I have certain books and magazines and such in my home. Somebody will raid my home and come in and take and put me away." What kind of country is this when people are frightened like that? But let me tell you something, friends. The truth is that many of the people that I have met out there that say they don't believe in conspiracies, far in the back of their mind, they're scared. What if it is true? What am I going to do? What if they do take away our food? What if they do to what, to Americans, what happened in the Soviet Union? Wow. I think there are a lot of people that are scared that you and I might be right. And many people are running and tap dancing away from these issues as fast as they can. And sometimes they'll actually hate and despise you for bringing these things to their attention. You're the bearer of bad news. You shatter their little illusionary world. What are they going to do now? You know, one of my books, I quoted Sir Winston Churchill. He certainly knew about this conspiracy. At first, he objected to it. Wrote against it, taught against it, but then he joined it for the money, for the power. But he said, you know, sometimes, or actually he says, most of the time, people have an inkling of what's really going on in the world. He said most people, when they first come face to face with the truth, it's so powerful it overwhelms them and knocks them down. And I don't know if he meant physically or mentally. Intellectually, spiritually. It knocks them down when they come face to face with the truth, said Churchill. But he said most people simply get up, brush themselves off, and go about their way as if nothing had happened. But every once in a while, there's a man or a woman who comes face to face with the truth, said Winston Churchill, and it knocks them down, and they get up, but they're changed. They don't just go about their business and pretend that nothing happened. Now they know, and the rest of their life, they're changed. I believe a lot of you listening to me understand exactly that truth. It happened to me. It happened to you, no doubt. We became conspiracy researchers when the truth knocked us down. But we got up. We didn't just dust ourselves off. We said, what do I do now? This is real. I've got to face it. It's not an illusion. Thank God for those who are awake, who have understanding. Now, you know, as I've told you, I've been in this field for a long, long time, and it's impressed me that people will run away from you. They will reject this. You can feel quite lonely as a conspiracy scientist, quite lonely. And by the way, a conspiracy scientist can have another day job or night job. He can be a postman. She can be a bank teller. He can be a plumber. She can be a university professor. He can be a banker. She could be a doctor. I don't know what else. She can be a housewife. He can be a mechanic. But whatever their vocation is, where they make their money or whatever, and most people don't have the pleasure and opportunity to be full-time conspiracy researchers. They, and I believe probably most of you listening to me, are indeed conspiracy scientists. It may be a part-time thing. Some people, they let it take over their whole life, which can be a danger too. You know, even Jesus Christ, as important as his mission was, told his disciples, let's take some rest. Let's take a day of rest. Not a bad idea to get away from the battle where we're facing supreme evil each and every day of our life. Now, a lot of folks say to me, Tex, how is it you got involved in this? Well, I think I was just born to be a conspiracy scientist. I think a lot of people are. And God, no doubt, sets our lives before us. He orders our steps. The Bible says, in Ephesians it says that. The Old Testament says the steps of a righteous person are ordered by God. And I can look back at my life and background. And I'm telling you the truth. I never write about who I am I'm not one of these narcissistic guys that wants to write his own biography or wants people to write about him all the time. I rarely tell people who I really am, but I'll just tell you today just a few facts because you may not know. But I was born pretty poor. I'd say quite poor. I did have a mom and dad. They got divorced later on by the time I was 9 or 10 years old. But until that time, I was the fifth of six kids. Didn't really have, I think, 2 bedrooms for 6 kids. I would often sleep on the floor. Or we would have sort of sleep sideways, 3, you know, on the bed. We had those old sheets, you know, where it never really covered your, you know, you pulled it up to your neck and it didn't cover your feet. So it got pretty cold at night. We didn't have central air and central heat back in those days, you know. A lot of times I would just sleep on a pallet on the floor with the door open. We didn't have to worry about criminals, of course. That was a wonderful thing. Yeah, you could just go anywhere you wanted to, do whatever you wanted to do. Nobody ever broke into homes, things like that. My father was a hard-working union man. Worked at a company that made chemicals for rubber, for tires, down in the little town of Port Neches, Texas, which is really an industry town. They said when you got within about 20 miles of Port Neches, you could smell it. Didn't have a terribly bad odor, but it had a smell of oil and chemicals. Now, let me, you know, a lot of people say, well, how poor were you? Well, let me put it this way. We didn't have any soap. We don't have any toothpaste. We don't have any rags except old pieces of, you know, I guess blue jeans or a shirt or something that got, you know, so threadbare. And then we just tore it into pieces. That's what we had for washcloths. We basically ate rice and beans. That was our meal. Never had meat. That would be incredible. And I think I remember the first time we ever drank milk. I think I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I remember, I don't know, my dad, I don't know how he got it, but he came home with a gallon of milk. And we all sat around the table and each of us was given a glass and we drank that milk. And I thought it was the best tasting thing I'd ever had. Later, my dad and mom divorced and I lived a while with my dad. We lived on the poor side of town. Actually, you will not believe this, but a train ran down the middle of the street. The train track was in the middle. You say people living on the other side of the tracks. Well, I lived right where the tracks were. And the train started to rattle the house. Actually, it was like a duplex. We lived on one side of it. And I remember having a little bit of sport chasing the rats that were inside. And every night, you know, when I did have sleep on a pallet, it was sort of tough because the roaches, and there were some big ones. They were like, you know, 2 inches. These Texas water bugs. And they crawl all over you at night. You say, well, boy, you really hit it hard. Let me tell you something, my friends. I think God knows how to protect you in every circumstance. And not only that, I became quite different than other people. You see, I never was in the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts or the Little League. I couldn't afford to buy a ball and a bat. I couldn't afford to go there. I didn't have a new bike. Usually at Christmas, we got one toy each, if that. But I remember one day, one of my brothers, they forgot him entirely for Christmas. He cried a lot that day. But it's so interesting to me that I like to read. And I would go to the little library inside the school, you know, whether it was in the middle school or elementary school, I read every book there was. My dad would have a lot of magazines and things he would get at the plant where he worked, and I would read them all. I don't care if it was True Detective or Union News, newspapers and newsletters, or True Confessions, Romance, whatever it was, I just wanted to read. I read everything the library had, biographies, political books. When I got to high school, I read everything that library had. Then I would take the bus. It only cost a nickel then when I lived in Beaumont, Texas. And I would go to the Terrell Public Library. Boy, did I find a gold mine in there. Can you believe this? There's a public library. They got all kinds of books. And they even let you take them home. I was 13 years old, and I thought that I was just this side of heaven seeing all those books and taking them home. And I read books on everything from atomic explosions and how it happened to, you know, Stalin and Hitler and the history of World War I. I was reading all those things, and other boys were playing with model airplanes. I didn't have any money to buy model airplanes. They were going to Boy Scouts, but I didn't have any money for the uniforms. I didn't worry about those things. I just read. I studied. I would go to the library, and I'd read Newsweek and Time, Life, Look, Saturday Evening Post, all the magazines. I'd read every one. I knew everything about the 1956 attack by France and England and Israel on Egypt. And I read everything about Eisenhower. I knew his whole life history and what he did every day as president. The next door neighbor subscribed to the newspaper. We didn't have enough money to do that. And I asked him if I could read the newspaper, and he said I could. Every morning I would get up before school, and I would sit on my neighbor's porch and read his newspaper. And then I would very neatly fold it back up, put it in front of his door. He liked that because the newspaper boy would always throw it, you know, weird places all around the yard. So little Tex would get up and get the newspaper, pick it up wherever it was, in the driveway or on the curb, and I would bring and sit on his porch, read the newspaper, cover to cover. Then I would fold it up very neatly, put it on his porch. All he had to do was open the door and get it. And he knew I took about, 20 minutes to do that, and he would have his paper. And I would know what was going on in the world. That was Tex Mars, dear friends. Now, a lot of people say, wow, you were deprived. No, I wasn't. I was blessed. I couldn't do all the things the other boys did, so guess what? God had me studying. God had me investigating. God had me researching. I remember in the fifth grade, all the little kids were, required to, something that happened to you yesterday at home, you come and you tell, report on it in class. I don't know, show and tell or whatever they call that back then. But I got up and I said I'd read this book about the atomic explosions at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I explained all about it, how so many people, Japanese, were killed and what kind of bombers dropped the bombs. And one of the bombs was, they call this, and this happened, and it ended with, the Emperor Hirohito resigning and a victory for the United States. But there was controversy because people were concerned that we were the first, America was the first to drop nuclear bombs on innocent people, et cetera, et cetera. The teacher came up to me after class. She said, I can tell you really read that. Do you read things like that? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, that's amazing. She said, tell me, who do you think ought to be president in this next election? And she was smiling. She was a real sweetheart, if I remember her correct. I said, well, it's between Eisenhower and Stevenson. And it seems that Stevenson is for the working man, but, Eisenhower has really done a great job in protecting our country in the end of the Korean War, so I think I would vote for Eisenhower. She was absolutely amazed. How could this little boy that's, 11 years old know all these things and even have evaluated the presidential elections? And, well, that's what Tex Mars was. So, folks, this is what I do. I don't do it for a living. I do it for fun. I do it because I enjoy it. And frankly, I enjoy exposing evildoers. Now, that's why I do what I do. God has called me for this work. He has trained me, I think, since I came out of the cradle to do this kind of work. Now, later on, by the way, so you'll know, when I turned 18, I joined the Air Force. And then, every opportunity I got, I took college credits and such in the Air Force and worked night and day. And finally, I got a bachelor's degree, summa cum laude. That means straight A's. And then I went on to get a master's degree from North Carolina State University. And then the Air Force was kind enough to send me, and I taught for 5 years at the University of Texas at Austin. So, I left the Air Force as an officer with degrees and all kind of education and training. And then I began to teach not only University of Texas, but for two other universities. But in all those things, God guided me. Now, maybe you have better credentials than Tex Mars, or you have lesser, but it doesn't matter. It's amazing how powerful and effective the Holy Spirit is in guiding you and me to exactly the resources that we need. I see it happening every day in this ministry. I need a certain book. I need a certain knowledge. I have this desire to know something about this thing that's just occurring. And bingo, somebody will send me an article. Somebody sends me a book. I see something online. It answers the questions that I have, and I'm able to put things together. Now, I want to talk to you today. I've said all that because I want to talk to you today, and next week we're going to talk about it some more, about the principles of conspiracy science. If you and I are conspiracy scientists, what must we know? What are the kinds of things we must know and do? What are the principles? Sort of conspiracy science 101. You're going to be interested in this, I know. And it could change your life. How do we become conspiracy hunters? What does it take to be a good one? Well, I'll tell you when we return. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. And this is Tex Mars, your friend and fellow conspiracy scientist. And I'll be right back after this brief message. Hello, friends. My latest book is called Conspiracy World, because there is a world of conspiracies arrayed against you and me. And every American citizen. In fact, every freedom-loving person on this planet has a dagger aimed at their heart. I hope you'll get a copy of my newest book. If you don't have it, I think you'll be pleased by the book. And I don't think you'll want to return it after you see what the contents of it are. The subtitle of Conspiracy World by Tex Mars probably tells the story. It reads this way, that this is, quote, a truth teller's compendium of eye-opening revelations and forbidden knowledge. That's right, a truth teller's compendium. And it's really a book of conspiracy science. It's entitled Conspiracy World. It's about the size of about three regular books. It's 432 pages, but it's this large format book. You can't put it in your back pocket and take it with you on a picnic, but I promise you, it's worth every cent. Now, what's the price of this book? Well, it's $30. Please add $5 shipping and handling, and call us at our toll-free number and ask for the book Conspiracy World by me, Tex Mars. Now, our phone number here is 1-800. It's toll-free, of course. 1-800-234-9673. Now, when you order Conspiracy World, well, we're going to give you, if you're not already receiving it, a free subscription to our newsletter, Power of Prophecy, which we publish each month. Of course, if you're already receiving the newsletter, we're going to update your subscription and make sure you get it at least a minimum of another 6 months. So Conspiracy World is the name of the book. 1-800-234-9673. $35, that's postpaid. We'll get it right out to you. We've got plenty of copies. And if we don't, well, we'll print some more. Okay? All right. 137 different topics it covers. 137. Many, many pictures, photographs. Got a very extended index at the back. So you can look up words in a very long table of contents. So you can see sort of the roadmap to where you're going. We talk about everything from Barack Obama to, oh my goodness, I can't even think of all the things we talk about in this book. Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict. Man, this is a Billy Graham. There's a power-packed book here of information. And, of course, we expose Republicans and Democrats. Who knows, maybe even a few libertarians along the way in the book Conspiracy World. Now, you can write to us and get the book for $35. Just to put a little note and say, Tex, $35, you know, for $5 shipping and handling.
Five plus five.
Is it really? $25.
Plus five.
Well, oh, I stand corrected. I guess I was trying to get an extra $5. But Sandra Myers, she's at the machine today doing all this. She just corrected me. It's $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. I know what it is. It's $30 if you buy it in a bookstore.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. Now I've got it straight. The list price is $29.95 or $30, but we offer it for $25. Okay. I tell you, I get corrected here quite a bit by these ladies. Sandra's over here, and then if she doesn't do it, well, then Michelle's down the hall, and Wanda's right here next door in her office. But they're lovely ladies. And they're usually right on all these little details, and they keep me straight. So we're going to offer it for a total of $30. Thank you, Sandra. She is a sweetheart. Okay, now, you can get the book online at our powerofprophecy.com website. And I believe you can do it for $30. Okay, and that includes the shipping and handling. All our books are shown there, including all our videos. You can see trailers of all our videos, too. And including my newest Rothschild's Choice, Barack Obama and the Hidden Cabal Behind the Plot to Murder America, 90-minute DVD video. Okay, powerofprophecy.com, our address, of course, to write for the book, to send your $30, okay, and we'll get the book right out to you, is Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. We've been here, I don't know. Sandra, how long have we been here? About 13 years?
Since 92.
Since 92, that's 8. Wow. We've been here quite a while. 18 years at this location. Well, they haven't come for me yet. They know right where I'm at. I've given them the address every week here on the radio, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas. We call it the Republic of Texas. But don't tell the feds that. They might send a SWAT team in to get us. 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now let's return to our regular program. We're investigating the principles of conspiracy science. You know, the whole world is rampant with Orwellian illusion, black magic, witchcraft. We're immersed in sinister global psychodrama theater. We really are. They are the magicians. We are intended by them to be their naive, hypnotized subjects. Malleable, pliable, like, you know, play putty or Play-Doh. Enabling then their criminal conspiracy to continue and succeed. But we're greatly disappointing the elite because more and more of us are breaking out of our mental prisons. We're smashing past the barriers of the intricately designed matrix that they have constructed around us. We're now awake, and nothing will ever be the same. You know, when I talk about conspiracy science, I want you to understand there's a whole group of us out there. And depending on your interest, you don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to be a doctor. You can still be a historian, a social scientist, an archaeologist, a chemist, an engineer. I think there's, about 1,000 engineers and scientists that have joined hands. And they're called, I think, 9/11 Scholars for Truth. There's medical specialists, forensic specialists, symbologists, architects. And you know, the historians, among we who are conspiracy scientists, study something called hidden history. And when we find out that the history that is written in the official textbooks is a bunch of bunk, and by the way, I like that word, bunk. Henry Ford, actually, he's the one that came up with that. He was asked about history, official history. He said, history is bunk. Thank you, Henry Ford, for a good word. My good friends at the American Free Press say that they're historical revisionists. They revise public knowledge. They bring it up to date. They expose lies and bring forth the truth. So they question the official accounts. And you know what? They often find that those official accounts are littered with a bunch of lies. And so it's so much fun and so much of interest to us to find out the truth. Now, again, this is not conspiracy theory. You know, I rather enjoy the movie that starred Mel Gibson and Sandra Bullock entitled Conspiracy Theory. It was a good movie with a pretty good story behind it. Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, I sort of like the man. He may be a little over the top sometime. He looks a little strange, but hey, maybe I do too. I don't know. But he had a TV series on True TV Network, and it was just entitled Conspiracy Theory. I like that. But I don't think it should have been theory. Maybe it was in his case, although he came out with a lot of facts and information that most people didn't know. So in his own way, Jesse Ventura, I'm going to give him credit for being a conspiracy scientist. He sure knows a lot more than the majority of people do. Now, there is a process of conspiratorial science. It's the same as any other scientific process. You know, I've taken some college courses. They were always boring. I don't want to take too much time on this, but you know, there is a process of science. It's called the scientific method. First of all, you sort of generally realize that something should be a certain way. So you make a hypothesis. You know, I theorize, so it's okay to start with a theory, you see. I hypothesize, I make a hypothesis that such and such is the case. But you got to go one step further. If you have that little bit of speculation or theory, the hypothesis, you've got to go to a second step in this process of conspiratorial science. You've got to test that hypothesis. test the theory. This is where theory is only step one. Because in the second step, you've got to prove or disprove it. How do you do that? You've got to gather evidence. You've got to test it. And by the way, sometimes you test over and over and over. I remember reading Thomas Alva Edison. They said, Mr. Edison, you're a genius. You're brilliant. You know, what a brain. He said, no, wait just a minute. I'm a scientist, and what I do is test things. He said, do you realize that I have to carry out 1,000 tests for each idea I have? And 999 are proven to be untrue. I have to throw all them out to get to the one thing that is applicable or factual, correct, that is important. I do all this work. And it reminds me of back when I was, you know, in college as a young man. The other students said, well, yeah, learning is easy for you. Taking tests is easy. All these courses are easy for you. You make straight A's. It's hard for me. But I noticed that they would go over to the union hall where the students were and drink beer and chat and play pinball machines and all that. Well, I was over in a corner somewhere, you know, studying. I would stay up all night to write a term paper. I would drink cup of coffee after cup of coffee trying to stay awake because I knew there was a test the next day. They would come many times unprepared. Well, it's easy for you, Tex. You're a brain. No, I wasn't a brain. I was just a hard worker. Let me tell you, perspiration, my friends, is worth a lot more sometimes than inspiration. And I'm a living example of that. I'm not so smart. I just work hard. Now, a third thing you do in this process, first you start out with a hypothesis. Then you test it, gather evidence, and prove it or disprove it. And you modify it. That's the third step. Polish it. Hone it. You might have to restate your hypothesis and start the process all over again, over and over. And number four, all during this process, you've got to be open to contradictory facts. New evidence comes forth. New facts. You might have to change what you thought you knew. I change all the time. A lot of people say, wow, this is a little bit different than you were talking about 2 years ago. Yeah, well, I know a lot more after 2 years. It's like a jury. You know, first you present the jury with the evidence in a trial, but at the last moment, new evidence may come forth that may disprove what you thought you knew. Now, all this is really involved. Let me just get it down to brass tacks, what we call connecting the dots. What you're doing is you believe a certain thing or a certain way, how something really happened, what really happened, and you weave a tapestry using all the facts and all the knowledge that you can gather, thread by thread until a picture emerges. I'm reminded of the kids, you know, that have the little puzzles. And when they put all the pieces together, slowly but surely a picture emerges. And then finally, they only need a few little pieces of the puzzle. Sometimes you got a pretty clear understanding, though, of what the picture is all about, even before you finish the puzzle. A scene, you see, emerges, and everything is inserted in the puzzle until this complete picture can be observed. I was commanding officer of an engineering squadron in the Air Force, and we were taught to use flowcharts. Flowcharts. This connects to this, to this, to this, until we saw the process, how work was to be accomplished. The Bible talks about building precept upon precept. A lot of people like to play with crossword puzzles. Nice little mind game. It's always sort of been boring to me, but I admire them. They're able to sit there and work these crossword puzzles. Finally, they come to complete understanding. You know, conspiracy scientist is a very good police detective. They really are. They're like private investigators. And you know, the Bible actually compliments people who investigate, who check out things. And you need to tell people this. Listen to the Proverbs 25:2. I love this. It says, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter. Yeah, God conceals things sometimes. There's mysteries of God. Well, how do you find out those mysteries? Because that's the glory of God. He can do whatever he wants, and if he wants to conceal something, he will. But wait, it goes on to say, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter. You see, God has given us certain mysteries even in his word. And he expects us to search it out, to do some research, to be good biblical scientists, to be students of his word. And if we are, he honors us as a king. Can you believe that? It is the honor of kings to search out a matter, it says in Proverbs. I like that. Now, I have a question for you, dear friends. Are you a kingly person? Are you? Well, you'll be rewarded because Daniel 12, verse 10 says, in the last days, the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. You know, Paul preached to the Bereans. It's a little province in Greece. They'd never heard about these things. Jesus, salvation, the cross. And it was prophesied, Paul told them, I'm sure, in the Old Testament by the prophets. Wow, I suspect they were just absolutely amazed. Now, you know what the Bereans told him, though? Paul was a very learned man. But even after preaching, the Bereans, they came to him, these people, and they said, well, thank you very much for your talk to us. Now we're going to go home and study the scriptures to see if what you said is so. Oh, my. You know, nowadays, if you told your congressman or government official or IRS bureaucrat, I'm going to study the law and I'm going to see if what you're saying is so. I'm going to study facts. They get angry at you. People are asking questions about the 9/11. And Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck said, how dare you? Bill Clinton says, how dare you question the official account? Do you have the audacity to say the government is lying about this? Why, you're un-American. You're not patriotic. Why, you probably are. You deny global warming? You mean you're trying to say that there might not be global warming? Why, that's the official account. Are you saying that 6 million maybe didn't really die in the Holocaust? How dare you? You monster. You're a Holocaust denier. You're a 9/11 denier. You're a global warming denier. Just for asking the questions. We cannot allow you to ask questions. Now, Paul could have done that. He could have said, you know what? God has called me to be an apostle. And you question what I've said? Why, look, I'm an intellectual. Look at all the books I've read. Why, I used to work for the synagogue. I used to prosecute Christians. I know the word of God. How dare you pipsqueaks here in Berea, Greece? Who are you to question me, a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin? I am so learned and you are just a bunch of dummies. I'm getting out of here and I don't care what happens to you. He could have done that. Happens all the time. People flare up like that. Pompous. Arrogant jackasses. They do. But the Bible, you see, says always be prepared to give an answer. Always deal with people patiently and with gentleness. And Paul said, you know what? I commend you. I commend you, Bereans. You, he said, are more noble than other people. Because you don't simply take what I say for granted and believe it, you go and search it out in the scriptures for yourselves. Now, friends, if people did that today, we wouldn't have many doctrinal heresies. We wouldn't have all these emerging churches and all these false teachers and these prosperity monsters out there perverting the word of God, would we? We wouldn't have all these false Bible versions. If people would simply become good Bereans, kingly men and women and search out matters for themselves. The same thing is true in these conspiracies. If men would determine to be conspiracy scientists and search out and investigate for themselves, oh, what a different world we would live in today. You see, this is the, I want to talk to you today and more next week even about the anatomy of unveiling these mysteries, of unlocking these riddles, because by the preponderance of the evidence, we establish facts and we understand and everything makes sense to us. And friends, it can save your life. It can save the souls and lives of your fellow man. Now, in using the scientific method, we look at the evidence, as I mentioned. Look at what happened in 9/11. We've got photographic evidence. There's videos. There's pictures. Hey, there's some people that were actually in the building when bombs went off. They're saying there's bombs went off. Mr. Rodriguez was a janitor there. He said there were bombs that went off in our building, one of the towers of the World Trade Center, even before the airplane hit the building. Oh, that's different. You see, what the scientific method is questioning the official accounts and going out and getting evidence. There are people who were on the scene. Find out what they had to say. Check out the aircraft. At the Pentagon, they say it said one of these, you know, aircraft hit the Pentagon, but the hole that it made is smaller than the body of the aircraft. Could have been. And then we know that these towers, these twin towers, came down so fast that it defied the law of gravity to consider that they would have pancaked on each other. And they didn't, in fact. The demolition process was far different than what the government account is. And then there's all the baloney about them finding the ID of Mohammed Atta, one of the supposed hijackers, in perfect condition blocks away, when everything else, even bodies, were crushed to dust. And there's the fact about the reinforced steel girders that were supposedly melted by the aircraft fuel. But engineers attest that is impossible, that the flames of jet fuel could never have been a Fahrenheit enough to melt the steel. Then there was a matter of the dancing Israelis, the Israeli secret agents of the Mossad, on top of a building across the water there in New Jersey, and they were had a video camera, and they were taking video of the whole thing. They knew it was going to take place, the Israeli Mossad. It turned out that Benjamin Netanyahu, who is now the prime minister of Israel, just happened to be in the United States at the time and was able to speak to the press. He was prepared. Now, seeing all these things that don't comport with the official government picture of events, then, friends, in the scientific method, you develop an alternative hypothesis. We can't trust the government account, but with all the new evidence that's come out, let's make up another hypothesis. And in doing so, you always consider the motive. Now, it wasn't really smart for these Muslims to do it. With all the resources, we've got to come back on them. They should have known there would be a war on terror and America would spend billions, trillions of dollars fighting in a crusade against them on behalf of Israel. Knowing that, I doubt if that would have been a smart thing for them to do. So you always ask the old Latin question, qui bono, which means who profits? The same thing in the JFK case. You know, at first people tried to say, well, maybe John F. Kennedy was killed by Fidel Castro in Cuba. Well, Fidel was already shaking in his boots, worried that the United States would invade Cuba. After all, that island is only 90 brief miles away from the Florida coast. And if he really was responsible for murdering our president, he knew the first thing that would happen would, well, he's a walking dead man. We would immediately send our entire military force over, conquer that little puny military force of his, depose him, and put our own president in power, which we could have done at any time. He didn't do it. Of course not. So who did it? Ask yourself, who profits? Now, in asking all these questions and gathering evidence and making hypotheses, trying to come scientifically with the answers through your forensic truth investigation as a conspiracy scientist, you're going to find there are people who oppose what you're doing. They don't want the truth to come out. You will become the object of hatred, scorn, ridicule of the establishment. Maybe even your friends will turn against you. They fear disclosure. But so what? So what? You're called to be a conspiracy scientist. Now, we've only got about 3 minutes left in this program today. I want you to tune in next week because we're going to cover some actual conspiracies, not just 9/11. We're going to talk about everything from the Bohemian Grove, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Masonic Lodge, the World Economic Forum. We're going to look at, well, even the new Supreme Court nominee, Miss Elena Kagan. Jew, lesbian. Could she be part of the conspiracy? Could it be that Abner Mikva, the Jewish lawyer, the billionaire, who used to be White House counsel for Bill Clinton in the White House, who was the mentor in Chicago, the powerful Jew who made Obama what he is today, could it be that Elena Kagan also is a stooge, a puppet of Abner Mikva, of the Chicago Mafia, of Rothschild? Why is it that on the Supreme Court, with Kagan's ascendance, when Judge Kagan becomes, and she will be chosen, believe me, when she puts on her black robe as one of the nine justices, guess what? America will have three Jewish Supreme Court justices, and six Roman Catholics, and no Protestants. Now, I want you to consider something. There are 7 million Jews living in America. That's around 2.5% of the total population. They have three judges on the Supreme Court now with Ms. Kagan. The Southern Baptists that are Protestant, they say there are 15 to 18 million Southern Baptists. In other words, at least twice as many Jews. They have, get it, zero, nada, zilch, goose egg, none on the Supreme Court. Can this be explained? What is your hypothesis as to why there is not one Protestant on the Supreme Court? Why there are three Jews and six Catholics? Why is it that Ms. Kagan is, as I will show you, very closely related to this Jewish power man, Abner Mikva, the same man who made Barack Obama a star? Ah, yes, many conspiracies, so little time. But next week, we're going to look into all these things and more. We're going to actually look at the 7 methods or techniques of breaking a case, of coming out with an incredible amount of conspiratorial truth. Well, it's been great being with you today. I'm Tex Mars. My prayer is that you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.